I totally didn't even see you waiting to get in. I was like, usually at like I had the Zoom screen minimized, and because I was reading this website, and usually there's a thing that pops up, like even when I'm not on Zoom, that'll show me, you know, this little window that'll show me you're waiting, and I did see it or something. I can't hear you. Are you muted? Is your microphone?
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you.
Okay. Wow, that was weird. I was doing last minute reading on it. And so that's why I was like, I'm just not going to text you. Let me just finish it. You'll figure it out. Let me.
This Unsolved Mysteries episode was crazy. The episode was crazy, but also some of the, like, just going down, like, is it the Netflix or the Unsolved Mysteries website? One of the two of them has a link, and I'll post it down below, but has links to the additional evidence. And then there was this Dropbox that has, like, the police reports and, like, the coroner's report and all these affidavits and stuff from that the guy had filed beforehand about the threats he'd received and stuff. So there's all this extra stuff. It's really cool.
Yeah, I downloaded some of it. I think it's the Unsolved Mysteries website because I was looking at the coroner's report. Coroner's report, yeah.
And
they had some not cool stuff, but good stuff.
Yeah, just a lot of additional stuff. But yeah, so I mean, well, let's get into it, I guess.
Yeah.
So welcome back to But We Digress. We are talking about Unsolved Mysteries, Volume 3, Episode 4. This is the new series on Netflix, not the older ones. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sorry. I was getting distracted. I was trying to pull up the site again because apparently I closed it out by accident. And so I was trying to get to it. I don't want to watch it. I just want to go to the unsolved portion. There we go. Go to the extras. So this case is about this guy named, the title of the episode is Death in a Vegas Motel. It's about this guy named Buffalo Jim. You want to tell us about Buffalo Jim, or you want me to tell them about Buffalo
Jim? You can tell about Buffalo Jim, although I love wrestling.
So do I. We're both wrestling fans.
Right. I think he was before my time, though. He was in Vegas and not obviously mainstream. So. But I am a huge wrestling fan, and I am admitting that on a podcast. So
that's
yes,
okay. I've admitted that it against before me. Too. So.
Educated women. Yes. Wrestling.
We love it. We love our wrestling. Heather Lifemate introduced me to wrestling. One of our first dates was watching, the pay-per-view, the Royal Rumble.
Oh, that's a good one to start off watching.
You know, because we started dating in January, and I guess that one's February or something, or it was the end, whatever it was, right? It was towards the very beginning of our relationship. First couple of dates, like we hadn't even had an intimate relationship yet. but we were, he sent me this text saying something about and he still talks about it to this day about how nervous he was asking me to want to watch it with me because he didn't know what I would think of it. And then my response was apparently, that sounds amazing. So to this day, he will still say that anyway.
It's a male soap opera. It's, I mean, I hate to say male, but it's like, you know, predominantly.
Yeah.
Men watch it, but it's aggression and.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. And so, and then of course AEW started, and then, you know, it's a whole thing anyway. But all that to say, this guy named Buffalo Jim Barrier, and he was voted Las Vegas's most colorful character in 2005. He's like this like character, right? Right. Like he's just this larger than life character. And he's in Las Vegas, and he's this wrestling promoter. He has had his own wrestling school and his wrestling TV show. And he died in 2008. And so his like time that we're talking like before 2008. So we're talking like, you know, 80s, 90s, you know, he's friends with like The Rock and stuff and like guys before that and everything. Right. So that's like the, you know, Hulk Hogan, Undertaker, all those guys. And he has four daughters, and two of whom we meet on the show, and one of whom is very active on the Reddit on this, wanting the story out there, wanting people to come forward and wanting assistance. So,
which I was looking for the Reddit thread with her.
Oh, okay.
I didn't find it. So if you want to send that, or I don't know if you're going to post it.
Yeah. She will answer certain questions, you know. Obviously she wasn't responding to everything talking about her, because there's people who, you know, were saying, you know, most people were pretty nice about it. And we'll get to all the theories and things that we're talking about. But the question in this is, how did this guy die? Like, was it an accidental overdose or was it a mob hit? Is essentially what the question comes down to. He is found in a Las Vegas motel, like a Motel 6 on the side of the road, like not one of the fancy, we're not talking like the Wynn or something here, right? By the way, one of my cats is named Winnie after that hotel. The other one is Cosmo, named after the Cosmopolitan. I named my cats after Las Vegas hotels because I'm an alcoholic. That's what I did. So we're talking about like a cheap Motel 6 side of the road, like, right. And he's found dead in the hotel room by maid. And they find him. Well, I guess like what had happened was the maid like went first, knocked on the door, didn't get any answer, poked her head in, saw that he looked to be sleeping, so he left him alone, came back and found him still there, and then got concerned at that point.
Yeah, same position and everything. Yeah.
And that's when she discovered that he was dead. So then they, you know, called the cops, you know, and all this stuff happened, right? Well, or all the stuff didn't happen according to their daughter, his daughter, that the Las Vegas Metro Police, according to her, they didn't really do a great investigation, because they decided early in the scene that he had died from a drug overdose. He was found with his shirt open, his pants down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Pants are on the ankles.
And then the cocaine around his nose and on his chest. Well,
they said white substance that they never tested.
Oh, that's right. They didn't test that.
No,
That's right. Yeah. They just saw it. Right.
Which that doesn't make any sense. Even reading the report, it says the white substance in his beard, but yet nobody thought, hey, let me test it.
And well, yeah, swab it. You know, well, and that goes to some of the theories about, you know, how the Las Vegas Metro Police being corrupt, being bought off by the mob, blah, 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 blah. There's a lot of stuff. And there's a lot of reasons why that, you know, that theory actually holds water, because why didn't they test the cocaine? There's so many other things that don't also make sense about the investigation, the quote unquote investigation.
Yeah.
So what the story that comes out is, he had gone to this hotel room with this woman named Lisa, and Lisa but was not there during, like, when he was found, she wasn't there. So she had gone missing at some point. The story that they came up with, the police came up with or whatever in their investigation, was they had come in, Lisa, and this is his longtime friend, Lisa, like they'd been friends for like 20 years, but she also happened to be a sex worker, was with her, with him. They go into this room, do some cocaine. He starts having a seizure. She bails out of there. But then calls him later because his phone showed a incoming call from her.
Mm-hmm.
The daughters had to come identify the body, which was awful. His wallet was there. He didn't have, wasn't any money except for the $1 bill that was folded on the bed.
Which they say is like a mob hit when a mob hits. So they say. I didn't look into that.
That's what they
say.
Yeah, I did. But they, yeah. So investigators soon learned this woman, like they said, they only knew her as Lisa. She was in the room when he started convulsing, having the seizure. And then after his death, his car vanished, only to later reappear in the parking lot. Some friends and family members and some investigators believe that he was a victim of foul play, a mob hit. And there's a story about why that is there. Or did he really just have a bad hit of blow and have a seizure?
And I mean, it said that he had diabetes and that he was like overweight and he had some health issues. So who's right. to say he didn't just do a regular cocaine and have a heart attack or whatnot?
Right. I mean, right. Well, I guess the amount that, if you have the document up, what the amount mm-hmm. that they found was like in his system was like super high, right? It's like a crazy amount of high. One of the things is that being a cocaine death or whatever is his daughter said have said that yeah he has done cocaine in his life but he wasn't a drug addict, he wasn't doing
currently
cocaine
doing it
currently. To that I say, well, you don't really know, first of all, and because he's done it before, he may do it now. If he can do it casually, which I mean, I don't know anybody who can do cocaine casually, but I hang out with addicts, so what do I know? we're in the rooms yeah. because we can't do things casually. But if he was able to do cocaine casually, you know, he didn't necessarily have to be an addict doing it all the time to just do it this night with this friend of his, right? He could have
yeah.
just been a casual user of it, or he could have been an addict and his daughters didn't know. I don't think you can ever say, and I've said this before on recaps and stuff, that you can, the family and friends that say, oh, they would never do this. They would never do this. Well, you can't say that, you know, because you just don't know. But those are the same people who say, oh, they would never commit suicide when they yeah. have committed suicide. You know, you don't want to believe that. I think we talked about that with the girl with the train, right?
Yeah.
The family was saying, oh, she was afraid of the dark. She would never walk alone in the dark, except that she did this night. We know yeah. that she did. You have her on camera doing it. So,
well, especially with this drug, I mean, in the wrestling community and just in that industry, whether it be like this, just that whole environment is
a lot of drugs.
Yeah, a lot of drugs. And in that time before, like the, you know, it was well known, like, different rehab centers and different programs for these athletes and wrestlers. And just mm-hmm. like, you know, it was common. So, yeah.
And it still is now. I mean, yeah. it still is super common, you know, but yeah, you know, the industry is replete with drugs, and he's in Vegas and he's a showman. And, you know, it's also just as possible that he didn't, and he was set up. I believe, you know, I believe the evidence shows both ways. So, I don't think you can ever definitively say, oh, he would never do this.
Yeah.
You know
yeah.
what I mean? So he could have. So that's the one theory. And her being a sex worker or whatever, and not wanting to be there when this guy's having a seizure, she doesn't want the drug possession charge. She's just naturally doesn't want to deal with cops, et cetera, took off when he started seizing, wasn't around, but cared enough about him to call him and check on him because there was a voicemail from her. Say, you know, asking to check on him, you know, seeing how he was doing. Part of the Lisa issue too is the daughter called Lisa the next day because she heard the message or whatever. So she called Lisa, and I guess Lisa's first response was like, I don't know, I'm not Lisa, or I'm not, what was it?
I don't know him.
Right.
Which is a pretty stupid response, considering, like, obviously there's something wrong and somebody's calling you so they can track you to a degree. Right.
But you know, she's a sex worker in Las Vegas. I mean, just maybe her natural
yeah.
reaction.
Which
to
this
say
is
that.
Where, like, this is what I'm thinking too. In Vegas, if it's legal, I don't know what the laws are as far as what is legal sex work and what mm-hmm. is not. So maybe she was doing like an illegal form of it. I don't know mm-hmm. what the, you know, the laws are, but some people on Reddit and whatnot were saying, oh, well, maybe she was scared because she's a sex worker and she wanted to run away. And I'm thinking, like, I think if any area in the country to be like less, like the least fearful of the police, it would be Vegas. I mean,
yeah, that but was they still arrest sex workers all the time who are doing it unlawfully. I don't know what the specific rules are. And I mean, just sex workers in general are going to be weary of the cops.
Right, of course. And but then there, you know, the people were saying, well, maybe she's a drug dealer. Maybe she's literally the one who gave him cocaine or whatever. And so that's why she's scared more than anything. I don't know.
Yeah, or maybe it's not that complicated. And she just random person calling, you know, and she was there when this guy started seizing. Like, yeah, she doesn't want anything to do with him. I mean, part of what makes me think that it was just an initial gut reaction for her to say that is because obviously those things about the phones, even in 2008, that stuff was accessible, right?
Yeah.
So you know, she, all that stuff is there and known, and she would know this. So I mean, she's not like a dumb person, you know, she would know this. So she would know that she wouldn't be able to get away with saying that. So why would she say it intentionally if other than, you know, if not just a gut reaction, you know?
Yeah. But then if she was so close to him too.
Yeah.
Why did she not like low key call the police, right? Like on a payphone or something. I don't know. Because 2008, there were still payphones around.
Yeah.
Like just something to notify, hey, you know, whatever, whatever, blah, 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 room this, hang up the phone. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That was kind of.
Yeah. So, okay. So that's the Lisa angle, right? We have an issue with his car, which is this fancy Rolls Royce, right? Especially at this sleazy roach motel on the side of the road, it's going to be noticed, right? How can you
definitely miss stand it? Out? Yeah. Yeah.
So it was missing after, you know, when the cops and everything first got there. But it was found later in the same parking lot. Like, how do you miss that?
I believe the daughters when they say that they really drove around and looked for it. Because if you saw the imaging from like above looking down at the parking lot, it's a very small parking lot. Like, you know, the one or two rows around the building.
This isn't like one of the parking garages at the big hotels.
Right. No. You're going to see the car in the daylight. I mean, even at night, you'll probably see the car. So I definitely believe everyone when they say that it was gone and then it.
Yeah. And then it reappeared.
Yeah.
Now that lends credence to a couple of theories that some people say that, okay, well, Lisa left in that car because that's how she got to the hotel, right? Because everybody said that they arrived together, or the investigation. Nobody seems to disagree that they arrived together. I think it was on the camera too. You could see she was there when they had the camera scene of him checking in. I think she was there. So they get together. So if after he starts seizing or whatever, she grabs the car and takes off. According on Reddit, people were saying that that's not necessarily an uncommon thing that happens with sex workers. In the hotels, like, or with the guys or with their clients or whatever.
I love Reddit. These Reddit
like the things that people know. And I didn't fact check that. I don't know if that is a common thing. Sex workers, if you want to let me know if you've ever taken a client's car after the deed, after they've seized, after having cocaine, I don't know. I mean, if that's
right. That came from user Mob Boss 6969 from Vegas. Posted that sex workers leave in other people's cars.
So if that's in fact true, it wouldn't be beyond the realm of possibility that she did take off with his car. She had, you know, it's a Rolls Royce. This guy's dying. Even if it is her friend, she may be an opportunist and be like, okay, I'm gonna go. So she takes off, but then maybe realizes the car, she can't do anything with it other than, you know, get her from point A to point B, because it's like, it's too well known of a car. Like, it's, you know what I mean? So maybe she just drove it off and then talked to somebody, someone of her, you know, I don't know, somebody, some friend who's kind of shady. And then they drove the car back and dropped it off.
Well, I'm wondering where the keys were, because I'm reading the report. I was just wondering that too. Yeah, I'm reading the report and it says that the daughter, you know, obviously they blanked out a lot of things, took possession of the belongings, but they didn't say what those belongings were that she took with her. So if his keys, I can't remember what they said in the episode, but were his keys on the bed? Did his daughter have his keys? Or because if they're missing, then yeah, that makes sense. That
I feel like there should be in the Reddit, it would be there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
How did she ride the car with the keys? The daughter said the police gave them the car keys, the wallet. Uh-huh. So I don't know. People are talking about spare keys or valet keys in the glove compartment. Maybe that's how she left. Because if the daughter got the keys at the scene, right? Yeah. Then how would Lisa have taken off in the car? Possibly a valet key.
Did that hotel have a valet?
No. Well, no, but cars have valet keys. My car has a valet key. And I never take my car. You know what I mean? Oh, you mean not the key. It's the key that you can give to a valet. It means like the fancy new electric cars that have like all the proximity. Yeah. You push the button and all that kind of stuff, and you don't have to actually put a key in or whatever. You have a valet key that has limited functionality so that your certain things can't be changed about the car. You can only go a certain distance. Like there's limitations that if you're using that key to start the car, there's limitations that will prevent like basically a valet from going Ferris Bueller's day off.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Yeah, that makes
if you
sense.
Don't get that reference, you guys go look it up because I'm too old to explain it to you. So could have been a valet key in the car. A Rolls Royce would probably have one, whether they would keep it in the glove compartment. Right. I don't know.
I have a Prius, so I don't know anything about fancy keys. So thank you.
Well, I have a Hyundai, but it has a fancy key. It's got all like the fancy, like gives you the illusion of that you're driving a luxury when you're driving a Hyundai. So there's that, the car issue. If the keys were given to the daughter, maybe she didn't get the keys. Maybe she thought she got the keys and she didn't realize she got the key. Maybe, you know what I mean? Maybe,
yeah.
Maybe the Lisa took the keys and the daughter just thought she got the keys.
Or she took the key off the ring, the actual Rolls Royce key, and left the house keys.
Or the corrupt Las Vegas police department slipped the keys. Lisa gave them back to them somehow and they got them back into the, oh, here's the property.
Yeah.
You know, somehow. So another issue, while we're still in the room talking about the items in the room. So we had his wallet was there. He usually carried around a lot of cash, but there was this $1 bill folded in half on the bed. Now, daughter said he always carried around a lot of cash. Why do you have $1? And also, he quote unquote never folded money inside his wallet. Who the hell knows why anybody would have a folded money inside their wallet? You can't ever definitively say they don't ever fold money they put in their wallet. Like, how would you know? No, that's, I think, a little ridiculous.
Yeah. What if he like used it, if he was doing cocaine and rolled, like was using it to roll?
Pulled it out, or maybe it was hers and it got left on the bed. Like,
yeah, you know, it's too many what ifs. It could have been money for the tip for the maid the next morning. I don't know.
Who knows? There's cocaine. If that's the story, there's any number of reasons why there could be a dollar bill. But the story of, well, he never folded money. But then daughter goes on to say that this folded dollar bill on the bed is like a mob sign, meaning like, we got you, you've been hit. Now, yeah. I've watched The Sopranos twice, the entire series twice. I've never seen anything about that. So I don't know that it's that. People on Reddit were saying, no, the only search things that come up on it when you search that are stories related to this. People, you know, there's like, it's not really a thing, or I don't know. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I don't run in mob circles, so.
Yeah, neither do I.
I don't know. I just know what I know from watching The Sopranos.
Well, and then also what they found in the scene too was a diazepam pills found in a prescription bottle.
Which that was not for the lay person, that is like Valium, basically. Right.
And that was found. This is where it gets weird, because anybody that takes prescriptions is going to have it in a bottle with their name on it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're supposed to. I mean, right, legally, exactly. If it's your legal prescription, yes.
Right. And so the fact that it was in a bottle with no label on it makes me think, was it his and he was using it just as Valium, like as a, you know,
because that's fun drug? Because you can buy them that way off the street.
Right. Or did somebody plant it there? That's right. The question. But I found that was pretty interesting. And then so for the coroner to say, well, he no longer uses illicit drugs to their knowledge, past cocaine addiction, but then completely ignores the fact that there was like unlabeled diazepam.
Right. Maybe which is a drug you people buy off the street because they abuse it, you know?
Right. And it's kind of like, I don't know.
It's a controlled substance. It's, yeah. You know, people get high off it.
Because this is what it says. Sorry. No illicit drugs or drug paraphernalia were located in the room. Well, actually, diazepam, if used improperly and not prescribed, is an illicit drug. So,
and in an unlabeled prescription bottle is improper carrying or whatever it is that, you know. And
exactly.
Yeah.
So I was like, that's kind of whatever. Okay.
That's us. Yeah. The other thing that was found was in a picture, you see this folding cell phone. God love the 2000 cell phones. 2008 cell phones. It's mm-hmm. a silver flip phone, right? Which, by the way, isn't it weird? I think that, like, is it Samsung that has the new foldable phone?
They do. I think so.
I'm like, are we going backwards? Why are we going back to flip phones? I thought we got rid of flip phones. Why are we going back to them?
But I don't know, but it looks like it could fit in my pocket. And I was like, that looks pretty cool, but I'll stick to my iPhone.
But we digress.
Right.
So, in this picture with his wallet or whatever and everything else is this picture of this phone. The daughters never got the phone. Nobody ever got the phone. We don't know anything about this phone. The phone disappeared. It's not in evidence. It's not anywhere. It's gone. It's nowhere, as we would say in this house. So we don't know. What's that look on your face?
Oh no, I just don't have my glasses on and I was reading some notes. So I was squinting.
Then the other thing that I found interesting, and I think that I've got this from one of the reports. So if you've got the reports in front of you, the police report, I think, or the log, the incident log, the major incident log, they go in, the cops go in and they see this or whatever, and then they leave the room. For some reason, they left to go do something or whatever. Then they were told to seal the room because it's going to, like, it could be a crime scene. So then they go back to it. So what happened during that time frame is that you have this room, this crime scene, possibly crime scene, whatever it is, a suspicious death scene, unattended death, as they would call it, right? Unattended for a period of time. So when you talk like chain of custody, da, 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 which didn't seem to matter because they didn't really do anything about it, any evidence, was, you know, this was all broken. You had this period of time where the scene, anybody could have gone into it. It wasn't sealed. So,
yeah.
And that also goes to partly to their initial assessment that this guy had an overdose and died of quote unquote natural causes. Right. Yeah. And they didn't treat it as a crime scene. So they didn't test the stuff. They didn't even test the white substance, which is ridiculous.
Shocking. That's ridiculous. I mean, that's
to me, that's crazy that they didn't even do that. I mean, obviously, like that, you know, the daughters got, well, they did an autopsy, and then the daughters got, they even paid for another medical expert to review the evidence or to do another autopsy, like a second opinion autopsy. And that woman, apparently, according to the daughter, said that they had this agreement where, you know, she would give her all the stuff and the report afterward. I guess she does this report and then withholds everything from them. Didn't give them anything.
Really? I didn't know that. Give
them anything. Says no. And then they tried to go after it again. She's like, oh, my computer died and lost everything on it.
Really?
That's there's one of the daughter posted on Reddit about that. Yeah.
I wonder if this woman in Vegas?
I don't know.
Because it'd be interesting if it was a mob hit and she was tied or paid off or threatened. I think more threatened than anything if it was a mob thing.
Right. Well, let's talk the mob angle then. So Buffalo Jim had this body shop, like where he worked on like Wayne Newton's cars and things like that, like fancy stuff. I mean, it didn't look like much, but that, you know, he didn't look like much either. And he had, you know, powerful friends too. And the business was right next to the strip club, the Crazy Horse too. Back in the day, it was the big thing, right? And it was owned by the mob. And he had gotten into sort of, I would say, a fight, but I don't know if that's the, it was a long-running dispute with them over the property. I guess the mob wanted to overtake his property and he refused to give up to it. And so he was this sort of, you know, long-running disagreement seems like a mild word to use, but yeah. It was constant battles with them, and where they would do stuff. If you go back and you read all his past police reports and the affidavits that he filled out, all the stuff prior, he was getting death threats. Things that would happen, you know, the things that would be said to customers about, you know, to prevent him from getting business and things like that. Moving cars and parking them in front of his business. I mean, stupid stuff like that, but then also like higher level stuff.
Yeah. And he made it clear to other people around him that if I die, it's the mob. Like, you know, you need to look at whatever, what was the guy's name that owned the
Rosillos?
Yeah. Yeah, you need to look at them, and they're going to make it look like a drug overdose. And
yeah, he had told his daughters that, and he had told a journalist that just a couple days before he died, saying, if I'm dead, like if you found me dead, it's they're going to make it either like drugs or a woman, or it's them. Mm-hmm. And part of this long running dispute with the mob people, and you know, he got death threats and all of this stuff. I guess one of the guys that was heavily in that issue with him had been in prison and got out of prison just days before.
I think it was the actual day before he died.
Was it the day?
It was I'm pretty sure it was the day before. Or the day. Yes, really close. And that was the owner of the Crazy Horse.
Yeah, Rick Rizzolo. Mm-hmm.
And then my thing too is, okay, so people were like, the day before. Yeah, he just got out, so he's coming for him. I'm like, you think he couldn't hit him from like in jail and prison?
I know.
Like, you think that he didn't have the connections to make that happen?
Yeah.
And if anything, it would have been smarter if he was in prison rather than out when it looks maybe more obvious. I feel like if you're at least away.
You think he's going to do it himself anyway?
Exactly.
No.
Of course not.
He's going to order it or somebody else. Yeah. So, well, I mean, and the guy had death threats. I don't know if you have those pulled up right now, but.
I have a bunch of tabs open.
Okay. If you happen to have
the threat letter.
Yeah. The threat letter.
Let's see the threat letter.
Hey, fraudcasters. Everyone knows that finding the perfect t-shirt can be such a challenge. I know I've always had problems with it, whether it was the fit or the quality. Luckily, the perfect t-shirt does exist, and you can find it at Skims, the maker of my perfect t-shirt bra. Now I have the perfect t-shirt to go with that bra. From either crop silhouettes to long sleeve layering tees, there's a style for everyone. My cotton jersey t-shirt is now a wardrobe staple for me. I reach for it almost every day, and the fit is so perfect because it snatches me right in at the waist. I've washed it a million times, and it's held its shape really well. It fits like a dream. I absolutely love it. And honestly, you guys, I thought like, okay, this shirt is going to be too small for me, and it's not going to fit right, and all the bulges are going to show. But it doesn't at all. I put it on and it magically stretches to fit me perfectly, and it holds all those bulges in. Every little but last bulge that I have is all held in, and it looks fantastic. I absolutely love it, and it is super, super comfortable, and it is one of my new favorite t-shirts. You can shop the Skims t-shirt collection at skims.com, now available in sizes extra, extra small up to 4X. And if you haven't yet, be sure to let them know that we sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select our show in the drop-down menu.
Okay, so what does that say?
It is important for you to pass this on to Steve Miller. And then there's blank has been overheard telling some of his close contacts that there will be violent attacks against you and Judge blank. He has let it be known that you will suffer in the near future. On the subject of blank, there are two addresses on him. Then it gives blank addresses, Nevada and Nevada. Blank owns a cell phone business on blank road, a valet service called blacked out blank. He was in charge of the valet at Crazy Horse and gave a kickback to blank at the tire shop across the street from you. Then blank and him would split profits above this. His mother, blank, would not be happy that her son is associated with blank the thug. Blank's been selling pirate video movies for years. He sends people out to videotape movies in theaters and then sells them. He's been making a killing on the project, all cash. His relationship with blank has been for a few years now, and it's because of his dad being a longtime employee of the blanks, of the blanks casinos. Yeah. It's like a lot of blanks. Sorry, everyone. Yeah, this is okay. Where blank has been hiding some of his cash. Others he's in trust with, and then it names a whole bunch of people that we can't see. And then it says blank was a drug dealer at the club and is now working at the blank as a bellman. What should be done is a raid on blank's home. They'll hit a jackpot. Yada, yada. Blank assisted a person named blank to get hired as a blank at the blank at rest. Oh my gosh, this is so annoying to read. Sorry. Yeah, it's okay. Keep in mind that some of these keep in mind that some of these people will be coming up for renewal work permits. Watch and see if they get the okay to work and renew their permits in casinos. Then it says signed anonymous Metro officer. I was like, okay.
Okay.
All right.
So there's that. The other kicker part on this whole mob hit thing is there was a successful FBI sting on the strip club for racketeering, RICO mob stuff, right? A sting where none other than our Buffalo Jim was an unofficial and confidential informant. So he was helpful in the success of the sting that shut down the club.
Yes.
So that's like, you know, it's not just this ongoing dispute about his property, about not giving it up to them. There was also this little bit of, oh, he was an mm-hmm. FBI informant. Snitches get stitches in ditches.
Yeah.
Lots of things, like there's a big part of me that says, yeah, it could easily be a mob hit, right? I mean, like I said, I've watched The Sopranos twice, right? Like there's so many ways they could have paid off any number of people in this scenario, in addition to having cops inside the police department, right? Mm-hmm. There's so many people that could be paid off to have had this happen. People would like to think, and I would like to think, that Lisa was his friend and wouldn't have been paid off to kill him. But she, you know, she may have, right? Or she didn't know that she was setting him up to kill him, but it was like, here, we'll pay you $1,000, put this coke on his nose, you know, or, you know, somehow make him do coke, right? I think those were plot lines in
House of Cards. Well, they were also playing
the same plot lines.
Weren't they playing sex games in the room? And then remember, he had his pants down to his ankles.
Right. Well, that's part of the, was that real or was that set up, right?
Yeah.
Was it set up to look like he was just having fun with a sex worker?
And I'm curious to know too about, like, they didn't have his phone, so you can't see text messages and things like that. But I feel like there's more that they're leaving out. There has to be, if he's in some sort of like relationship, I mean, like sexual or whatnot with anyone, sex worker or girlfriend or anything, that like there would have to be some sort of other evidence or people coming forward, but maybe not. I just, they didn't talk about it, at least on the show.
Yeah,
you found anything.
I mean, given who this guy was, I mean, given who anybody is, I mean, it's not based on an appearance or how somebody behaves in public, right? Anybody could be like behind the scenes wanting to get freaky in a hotel room,
right?
I guess, right? You know, little hookers and blow, as they say, right? And so it's perfectly plausible that that's what this guy wanted to do. He's an older guy, you know, wasn't like he was known for his good clean living, you know, had some coke and had a heart attack,
mm-hmm.
and that's it. And then, you know, Lisa takes off because she doesn't want to be associated with a dead body,
right,
or a sick bot, whatever it is, despite their friendship. You know that could absolutely be the case, is the Occam's razor type mm-hmm. thing, right? The simplest explanation
is the answer. But on the other hand, it wouldn't take a ton for it to have been a mob hit either. I feel like setting something up like that would be super easy for them to do. That's like,
and let's talk about the key card.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So they're saying that based on when he came into the hotel and checked in, that he, I don't remember the exact time that he checked in, but
8:15.
They said that the key card was swiped before he checked in, but too late for the like housekeeping to clean.
Because it was like 8 o'clock and it was like 8:15 and he checked in at like 8:30. The card swipe was like 8:15.
And then I heard on Reddit, so I don't know how obviously true this is, that the time of the cameras and the time of the key card were not synced up correctly. I don't know if that's true or not.
Right. No. So that to me is that had to have been the answer on that. And the reason is because I guess the log of the key swipes itself, if that one at 8:15 or whatever, the one that was like 15 minutes before he checked in, that, well, what the camera shows him as checking in, right? Let's be clear. The camera shows a timestamp of when he's checking in. The card swipe shows guest, not housekeeper, shows guest card 15 minutes or 10 to 15 minutes before the time stamp that shows him on the camera. So the implication is that somebody else swiped a card and entered his room before he did. Now, the reason I think that it's just the times were not synced properly is because the whole printout shows, if that was somebody else other than Jim, there's no subsequent swipe from him. Mm-hmm. The next one isn't till the next day.
Yeah.
So that had to have been him because we know he had to have used the card. So
get in.
In that situation, I think absolutely that had to have been a timing issue, right?
Yeah.
You know, because there's no other time. He didn't just like go through the door like a ghost, like the ghost that's in Kaya's bedroom.
Yeah. Oh, Simon. Ooh.
Yeah. You gotta share that story.
Oh my God.
I meant to start off with that and then I forgot about it until just now.
Yeah. It's like freaky.
Yeah. So the key card swipe thing is a red herring. I'm a little bit like Unsolved Mysteries. Really, that one's an easy one. Like, why'd you have to throw that in as a red herring? There's enough other things I think in this case that are legitimately, you know, questions. But that was just
And so let's talk about why the mob would put a hit on him, because the guy had already served his time. He was out of prison, right? Mm-hmm. Was he scared more about future, you know?
He wouldn't be scared. He's scared, just retaliation. Just retaliation. He participated as a snitch in getting the club shut down for racketeering.
Yeah. What do you think? Do you think it was murder? Do you think it was suicide or murder?
Do you think it was a
drug overdose?
Or natural causes. I can be convinced either way. I think there's convincing evidence on both sides that are very simple. Like to me, a mob hit in this situation, to have it happen the way that it does, isn't such a convoluted, doesn't require so many mental gymnastics that it seems implausible. I feel like it's a very easy payoff. These people like that's, cops do that for God's sakes, you know. And you know what I mean? Like, I mean, maybe I just watch too many movies and too many TV shows. I don't know, but I feel like it wouldn't be that hard to make this happen as a mob hit setup to look like a cocaine induced heart attack.
Yeah.
Why couldn't it have been both? Why couldn't the mob have set him up to also kill him?
Yeah.
To make it because it would have to have been the cocaine. Like I know they didn't.
And if he's taking diazepam and cocaine, he's taking a depressant and a stimulant.
Was the diazepam found in the toxicology report?
No, did they even do a toxicology report?
Well, yeah, if they found the cocaine in his system,
they did. Okay, see, I couldn't. Let me see, because I'm looking at the coroner's report. Body, property, witnesses, narrative. it talks about transporting the body, but then there was no, I don't see any other, unless there's another document on from the medical examiner at the Clark County.
Yeah, not, unless it's in the coroner's report, it's not going to, because we have the Buffalo Jim's affidavit, and that's from one of the earlier threats incidents of various things. If you want to read all the various shenanigans that were happening between the two businesses, those are all there. The coroner's report, you have a sworn statement by Buffalo Jim, again, related to the earlier stuff, the threat letter, two police reports by Buffalo Jim, again, the earlier stuff, and then the update to the major incident log, which shows that the room was unattended. So unless it's in the coroner's report, this isn't the autopsy report. This is just a coroner's report. Right. Is that different?
Yeah, I think so. Let me see. Autopsy.
Yeah, this is just a report of how they found the body or whatever. Placed the decedent. Okay. And then transported to the medical examiner's office. So that's where we wouldn't, this would be before the toxicology report. But if they found that there was cocaine in a system, wouldn't there be other, maybe?
So I'm reading an article that the Las Vegas Sun posted in 2008. Mm-hmm. And it says that Murphy, who is the coroner at Clark County, said, mm-hmm. Murphy said barrier, died of dilated cardiomyopathy, which according to the American Heart Association is the disease of the heart muscle that causes the heart to become enlarged and weakened, which I actually have cardiomyopathy, so that's interesting. I was born with it, but it's different. So there's a toxicology test found cocaine in the 55-year-old's body, and cocaine intoxication was listed as a contributing condition to his heart. So I guess he did test positive for cocaine. It just goes back to, why didn't they test the substance on his beard? That's a white powdery substance, but nobody decided to keep that as evidence. That's all it said. It didn't even talk about, this article doesn't talk about whether or not he tested positive for the Valium or for any other drugs, but it does mention cocaine.
Interesting. So he had the Valium in his pocket, right?
Which, if he did, right. Well, they didn't.
But that would go towards what the scene looks like as to how to classify the scene.
Yes. And as somebody that has cardiomyopathy, it is a very serious condition. It's a condition too that, like, depending on what kind you have, like, obviously his may be because of the long-standing drugs that he took when he was younger or whatever. But at the end of the day, it's where you hear, like, athletes drop dead or people that have never had health issues. So it's when your heart is like that and your ventricles are weak, if you do drugs on any level, especially a stimulant like cocaine, it could have killed him for sure if he's got cardiomyopathy. So I was leaning more towards the accidental death and that she fled because she was scared, this Lisa chick. But again, like you said, there is evidence. I mean, he felt threatened. So there was evidence to support that it was a hit.
Yeah. There's also a website that the daughters have, I don't know, they run it, but they promoted it, called Buffalo Jim Barrier. I'll link it down below as well. That has more information about who he was, the timeline, why, you know, what, the pictures, all kinds of things, the Motel 6, the mm-hmm. business, what the crazy horse looks like, you know, next to his business and all that stuff.
Motel 6 parking lot is literally one row of cars throughout the entire, like, you have to drive by the Rolls Royce. I'm looking at the picture now.
Yeah. Yeah. For real. And all these will be posted, of course. So, yeah. So, I mean, somebody on Reddit put it well, was, I don't think this was a mystery. You mess with the mafia, you end up dead in a motel. He should have realized there are people you could never mess with. If I were one of his kids, I wouldn't dig in too much. They're lucky to still be alive. There cannot be any justice when organized crime is involved. All you can do is stay away as far as possible. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's a pretty good summary to me, honestly. And maybe it's just my cynical nature that, like, I'm not going to take the crime scene for, you know, I'm not going to just take it at face value because I watch way too much, you know, Dateline. And I've seen way too many stage, you know, not in person, but I've seen episodes about stage crime scenes. So I automatically assume the crime is staged. If it looks like something, then that must be fake.
You have to wonder, like, how many times police just walk into a dead body in Vegas. I mean, let's think about it. Like, you know, an overdose or something. I mean, they've got to get it all the time. So walking
dead body in a hotel in Vegas.
Yeah. So they walk into Motel 6. Literally, they see a guy with his pants down. They see white substance on his beard. Oh, yep. Here we go again. Like, maybe that's kind of what they were thinking. It happens all the time. But then again, you would think if it happens all the time, dead bodies in Vegas, they would be at least doing the right thing and have the knowledge. Unlike the Metro police and the train unsolved mystery case, where we're talking about, they're completely incompetent. These people have a lot of practice and experience in doing crime scenes. And
but they're also, I would say they're absolutely corrupt in what, you know. In the mob right. presence in Vegas.
And they go all the way through the police, I'm sure, and everywhere else.
Yes. So, I mean, the very fact that he was a FBI informant in what turned out to be a successful raid. I mean, I think that's also key. I mean, although if it wasn't successful, I'd probably worry also, but the fact that it was successful, sent all these people to prison, got the club shut down, you know, which was a mob enterprise. You know, I don't know if it was like the Bada Bing in Sopranos, but I feel like it might have been a little bit bigger than that. And you're looking at me like crazy because you haven't watched the Sopranos, right?
I haven't, but it's been on my like wanting to watch list. One of those for about 20 years now.
So good. It's up there with like Breaking Bad as far as like quality series.
Yeah,
like it's super, super quality. You have to remember though that when it was filmed, so it was in the 90s.
I love the 90s, so
great. But yeah, so this strip club is obviously a mafia front. There's probably a room in the back where the guys, you know, sit around talking about meat and, you know, like, you know, the back of the Bada Bing where they play pool and all the things. You guys who watch the show know what I'm talking about. So it's like that, but it's Vegas, so I feel like everything is like Vegas sized. Yeah, bigger,
more lights.
It's Vegas sized. And then he received anonymous threats and warnings, and he has all these, you know, there's all these police reports and there's all this like known animosity between them, you know. And animosity is putting it nicely. That's like saying, you know, two neighbors get in a fight because one of your neighbors is weird and likes to throw rocks at squirrels and accidentally hits your car. Oh, I'm sorry. Am I projecting? Like, true story. Real life happened to me. My neighbor came.
Please don't end up on Fear That Neighbor on the ID Network. I can't. Please don't do that.
No, she accidentally dinged my car door because she was throwing rocks at squirrels, apparently. So she wanted to pay me money for my...
Well, that was nice. At least she offered.
Yeah. But, I mean, and I took it, but...
But poor squirrels. Why are you throwing rocks at squirrels?
On a tree out front of her house. She also has AstroTurf in her front lawn. So
that's interesting.
Her front lawn. So, okay. I mean, it's, I guess, less maintenance. You know, she's older, so maybe it's just because it's less maintenance. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't go check it out because her house cameras that she has are.
Yeah.
Cover a lot. She'll probably see my house from her house.
And I'm wondering too. So if he was felt so threatened by the mob, why would he go to, and he thought he was going to die of a, you know, setup. Why would he go to Motel 6 with a woman?
Yeah. That's the other thing. People are like, okay, 2 days before he dies, he says, if I die, it's the mob and it was drugs and women.
Yeah.
The next day or 2 days later, he ends up dead in a hotel room with drugs and women involved. Yeah. Like exactly that. Like,
I guess. Yeah.
So.
And why hasn't this Lisa woman spoken out at all? Probably because she's a sex worker and wants to remain anonymous, but.
Right. That's my guess. And I feel like if I go deeper and deeper, although, I mean, how much time can I devote to Reddit in one night?
It's a slippery slope on Reddit.
It is.
It's a and black hole.
I've spent several nights deep in the Reddit hole, and that sounds really dirty, and it's not nearly as dirty as it could be.
Yeah.
Is it Rule 34? No, I'm not. Mm-mm. And yeah.
It's sad for the family too, because I don't think they're ever going, if it was a mob hit, I don't think they're ever going to get the answers that they seek, unfortunately, at this point. I would be nice if somebody were to come forward, but I don't think that will happen, especially for fear. If it was a mob, like fear of retaliation for somebody snitching again, or, I mean, there's just too many things. I don't know.
Yeah. Which
is terrible.
Yeah. Somebody else, just a comment to go to our earlier conversation. Somebody says, I was surprised when I found out Philip Seymour Hoffman OD'd on heroin. And I'm sure that there were those he worked with that were also surprised. Sometimes drug addicts manage to compartmentalize their lives and hide their addiction from friends or loved ones.
Yeah.
Or they could have relapsed. You know?
I mean, I know a lot of people in my college years and stuff that were not addicts in the sense that they had to do it, but they did cocaine every now and then.
They were casual drug users.
Right, casual users. Not saying that that's right or wrong or anything.
Well, no, but we always just, talk about right. in rehab, it was like, well, for those people who could shoot heroin like a gentleman.
I don't think I...
No, that's the joke. Yeah, nobody can.
Of course.
That's the joke, though, to refer to people who do stuff casually, you know?
Right.
There aren't people who shoot heroin casually.
Sure he didn't tell his daughters, hey, I have sex with sex workers, you know?
Right.
Did he tell them that? No. So there's probably things that he's keeping.
Yeah. Just a lot of things. I mean, they didn't seem to me to be as cut off to the possibilities of the sex workers and the drugs and stuff as like the family in the Girl in the Train episode did about her not committing suicide.
Yeah.
They were so adamant that none of the things that would have had to have been possible for her to have committed suicide, the walking alone in the dark, the this, mm-hmm. There was a whole host of things that they said, oh no, she would never do that. Never do that. I don't feel like the family in this situation is as adamant. They're just like, okay, he didn't fold money in his wallet, so this might be a mob hit.
Hey, the car wasn't there and now the car is there. Hello. Like there's certain things that are just not adding up.
They didn't say, oh, he would never be with a sex worker. No, they said Lisa was his friend. Like this is the kind of people he's friends with. He's friends with everybody. Councilman was one of his best friends. You know, sex workers are his friends. You know, he's everybody, you know, mm-hmm. He's that kind of guy who's just friends with everybody. So I don't, you know, they weren't as adamant that these series of things that would have had to have happened for it to be an accidental overdose. They think that it was a mob hit, I think, you know, and they want more information on, obviously. And I don't think that's ever going to happen, but like you said, you know,
was he cremated too? I think.
No,
he wasn't. Okay.
I'm trying to remember. I don't know for sure, to be honest. They talk about burying.
Well, you said they did this. They did the second autopsy, right?
Yeah.
So the
body obviously was around, for a while. You know. So, the other possibility too is that the coke was bad. Like Lisa was given coke that was bad. Like it was, like maybe she didn't know that she was intending that they were setting him up to be killed.
But like then wouldn't she partake in that too?
She might have.
If she was running it, I feel like she would probably do it too.
Yeah.
I
mean, and then she couldn't have dirty coke because then she would get,
I don't know.
Get unalived as well. Yeah. Don't know.
A lot of thoughts though. I mean, anything is possible.
Like how would, if they were going to try to use her to get him to take cocaine to kill him, how would they know that the cocaine was going to kill him?
And how did they know that it was for sure he was going to take it?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then if he didn't, you know, and they would have found another way to off him, you know?
Yeah.
I'm just playing. I'm just like setting this up as like an episode of TV episode. I'm like writing the script, you know, and, but that's something that somebody else on Reddit also said. This was like, you guys watch too many of these shows. You're always looking at the angle, right? Sometimes it really is just that simple. And that also is very true as well. I do watch a lot of shows. I do always think there's an angle.
I watch so much ID Network. I watch so much ID Network that every time I leave my apartment, I'm just like looking. I'm like, is anybody in my car? Is anybody around me? I have my pepper spray and my keys in my hand.
Right.
You know.
Exactly.
Got to be prepared.
Yep. Make sure my Ring camera doorbell is charged up. Watch. Of course, I live in a townhouse area, so like, you know, when the other row of houses, when they take their trash cans out, you know, that sets it off because people will walk by. And I'm a corner unit, so people will walk by my house to go to the side because right against like the woods and stuff. So people go, myself included, use that to go walk our dogs and things like that.
So
people are always walking by. So it's always setting it off. I mean, even on like the lowest setting, but whatever, it's fine. Like I said, I'm an end unit, so at least I only have limited. Small price to pay. It's fine. Anyway, back to Vegas and Buffalo Gym. If you guys know anything, I'm going to link all this stuff below so you can go to go and check it all out yourself. Join us on our Facebook group. When I post this episode, join conversation there. Join us on Instagram. Come visit us on the Fraudcast at www.thefraudcast.com. You can check out our merch store. It's not a ton of stuff there right now, but if you have merch ideas, let us know. We're just getting off the ground, so, you know, we're getting there. There's currently an active code right now for a discount. If you want a 15% discount, code NANNY, use code NANNY, you get a 15% off discount. You know, reward for listening all the way this far. special code. Maybe next time it'll be more. Black Friday coming up. There'll be some codes coming out for that too. I think that's all we got for you. Tune in next time as we discuss the next episode of Unsolved Mysteries. Thanks for joining in. We'd love to hear what you guys think too. Bye.
Good night.
Hey, fraudcasters. You know, I used to find bras to be so uncomfortable and constricting. They were the first thing to take off when I got home. But Skims has changed all that. You guys know I love my Skims Fits Everybody t-shirt bras. I own them in just about every shade now. I wear them every single day when I leave the house. And they are completely worth the hype for the amazing shape and support they give. But what I was not expecting from them was how comfortable they are. Even the underwire bras that I wear all day, I barely even notice. Definitely not the first thing I take off when I come home anymore. Y'all, I'm a 36 double D and I've had a reduction and I've gone up and down and lost weight and gained weight and all the things. And the Fits Everybody t-shirt bra, I swear, fits me the best. I finally found a t-shirt bra that I can wear. But not only that, it is the best bra that I own. It holds the girls in so well. And let me just say, Hetero Life Mate really appreciates these bras too. Shop Skims bras at skims.com. Now available in 62 sizes from a 30A to a 46H. Plus, get free shipping on orders over $75. And if you haven't yet, please be sure to let them know that we sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select our show, The Fraudcast, in the drop-down menu that follows.